Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain and the letter x.com/AI.
Basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille, fade away.
Bryant for the win. Bang!
James puts up the three.
Oh, it's good.
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in. With 0.5 of a second remaining.
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And yesterday, the Denver Nuggets traded Peyton Watson to the Cleveland Cavaliers in a growing trade. It's now going to be a five-teamer, but the new details that we know are Max Strus is going to the Clippers, with Watson going to the Cavs, and a future Cleveland first and a future Sacramento Kings second round pick going back to Denver, with no player going back to Denver. D, a while back, we did a pod on kind of the weakening West and how Denver is really under the gun this summer. And I think that this was the most severe manifestation of that, not getting anything back for a player who was pretty good for them last year. And if they have any hopes into the future, you hope to keep that two-way 23-year-old wing, but they're not able to do it, and because they're still over the second apron as a result of that, they are in that taxpayer level where every dollar they spend costs them seven, and so signing Watson to the deal that he signed would have cost an extra $150, $160 million for them, so not feasible. We talked about how it was either going to be him, Cam Johnson, or Christian Brown, most likely, who would move. It ended up being Watson. What's your reaction to the trade?
So first of all, Denver's worse after this. And we can talk about the Cleveland piece of this, who also signed James Harden. Mm-hmm. But for the Lakers' perspective of who they're battling with at the next tier after San Antonio and Oklahoma City, I think most analysts would have slotted Denver in to that position. And I don't know if that was based off of keeping Watson or not, but they're weaker now after Watson is gone. And to your point, Pete, I think Denver had a couple of paths to choose. And I don't think trading Christian Brown was ever really an option for them. They just signed him to an extension last offseason that doesn't kick in until this year. He's on the books for five more seasons at $25 million a year. That's not a plus value contract. He's a negative asset at that cost.
and his value is probably lower than it's ever been. So even if they could, it probably wouldn't be wise for them to.
Yes, and I expect for Brown to rehabilitate some of his value this season. I think part of the reason why his value is as low as it is because he got hurt last year and he just missed a bunch of time. That said, then, I think the most viable path for Denver this offseason was keeping Spencer Jones and Cameron Johnson or keeping Peyton Watson. And I think OKC sort of throwing the monkey wrench at them with signing Spencer Jones to an offer sheet put them more into the keep Cameron Johnson side of things to pair with Jones as their front court duo rather than going the other direction. This is tough, though, Pete, for Denver. And to lose a player who is only 23, who has made real improvements over the last season and a half, I would say, and last season showed a viability as a starting level player, first stepping in for Christian Brown when Brown got hurt, and then filling in for Aaron Gordon and Cameron Johnson as a starter when those guys were all out. And then that stretch, Pete, where Jokic was out and Watson had to do more on-ball stuff, he showed that he had more capacity as a usage player and a guy who could do more on the court than just cut and stand in the corner as a spot-up shooter and be a defensive guy. And so to lose that sort of positional versatility, a guy who could play small forward for them but can defend up in small ball lineups, can defend down when Aaron Gordon is on the court with him, just a very versatile defensive piece that I think as long as they have Jokic, they can make a lot of things work, but it's very difficult to lose a player like him. And he's basically out just for future draft capital that does give them some more optionality in terms of being able to add stuff. But as a second apron team, why are you adding pieces at that point when you could have just kept the guy who you just traded away, right? It seems like this is as much a salary avoidance as anything else. And that's a tough lane to drive in when you've got Jokic in his prime, Jamal Murray. This team is trying to win, Pete.
Yeah, but they were up against it, man. That's part of the reason why we brought this up is that they were very much facing consequences of the last few years. Just the salary they have on their books made it untenable. And so now they've got a pretty good starting lineup when everybody's healthy with Jokic, Murray, Johnson, Brown, and Gordon. That's a good five right there. But after that, they lost a ton of their depth between Watson and Hardaway and Valanciunas.
Yeah, Valanciunas is gone. Bruce Brown didn't resign or is still a free agent. And so those were, what, players 6, 7, 8, and 9 in their rotation, and they're all gone besides Spencer Jones. He's the only guy that they retain from their playoff rotation guys.
So that makes him probably their sixth best player at this point. And Chris Haynes reported that they're turning their attention to DeMar DeRozan as perhaps a backup ball handler there. But D, that's a team that they lost in the first round to a team that didn't have its best player for a decent portion of that in Minnesota. And had a really rough offseason from the perspective of win now. They've got Jokic eligible for an extension, but hasn't signed anything yet. He's playing in international play right now, but he can be a free agent next summer. And so I look at the overall offseason between both conferences. I feel like the East got way stronger and the West has diminished a bit. I think Denver's clearly gotten worse. Minnesota, who we're going to talk about in a little bit about the domino effect to Jonathan Kuminga, at the very least, they're an unknown. They've totally changed their style of play and trading for LaMelo Ball, which is great. Super talented player. That's going to be a killer backcourt duo, but they're only really good frontcourt player. Like somebody who has a little meat on their bones and can play the 4 or 5 spot is Rudy Gobert. And beyond that, their bench is very weak, as is Denver's. And we'll probably do a whole pot on this, but the teams kind of 6 through 10 or 12 in the West, there's not a lot of like upcoming, man, that team's going to be really good. There's no San Antonio like last year, right? That I think they were at least a year ahead of schedule relative to everyone's expectations. But I did think that there was a certain amount of like, Spurs are going to be pretty good in a couple of years. It just turned out to be faster than that. There's nobody like that, I think, in the West that I see a lot of great opportunity for the Lakers within all of this. And it's great to see a rival get weakened.
the Lakers are in a very similar position. And if we were not the Laker Film Room podcast and instead we were the Nuggets Film Room podcast or something like that, like stab me in the neck, I guess, if that were the case. But I mean, we might be spinning the Lakers situation as, okay, they've got a top player in Luka, but they turned over their entire roster as well and they lost LeBron James. And so
sure.
I do think we're looking at the Lakers through the lens of we like what they did and they can improve and build on things, but it is this hodgepodge group, Pete, of teams four through, I would say four
sure.
through 10 that are like all fighting for the same thing.
That's totally a fair point. My pushback on that would be is that the Lakers, unlike Minnesota and Denver, I believe, Denver especially, Denver was forced into this kind
yes.
of summer. Minnesota is very close to the second apron, and they've hit a ceiling of we're not going to get beyond the conference finals. San Antonio beat them pretty good. Lakers still are in the process of growing toward that second apron that they can add talent and still make some moves, whereas the other two teams are sort of capped out in that. So you're right, and we lost LeBron, and we can't just, oh, by the way, that. But again, this was the summer that they really pointed toward, we're going to remake their team. And so what the Lakers did was a lot more by choice. We'll see if they made the right ones.
I think the point that you made in the middle there about the spending capacity that the Lakers still have over the next two or three seasons is a critical idea that with Denver over the second apron now, right? And Minnesota flirting with that number already. They're basically like, I don't know, 8 or 10 million under the second apron now, but
it's four. It's only four million. They're only 4 million under the second apron. Yeah.
So they don't have, and if teams are going to treat the second apron as a hard cap, Pete, then that's where the maneuverability, to say nothing of the restrictions that come with being an apron team, like the sorts of trades that you can make if you're over the second apron, future draft picks being frozen, stuff like that is sort of like, oh, okay. The Lakers are well under the first apron right now, and they project to be under the first apron for at least another season while still being able to use their MLE. And so that sort of flexibility in looking at a 12-month transaction cycle now for the Lakers from this point, where they'll get a trade deadline and then another free agency period, that's where I think if the Lakers are already a team that projects to be in the top five or six of the conference with still having spending mobility to go higher than that, they can start to elbow their way into the top three again, along with Houston, who I think is the other team that is better positioned even than Minnesota and Denver in terms of spending capacity and being able to maneuver that way. Let's take our break here, Pete. And when we come back, I do want to talk about the fallout and the domino effect of things starting to move now.
Latte for Keenan?
That's me.
Hey, you're...
Yeah.
Buying a car online on AutoTrader?
Really? But unlike other sites, you can start online, test drive with a local dealer, then finish online or at the dealership.
Cool. Enjoy.
Buy your car online on AutoTrader. Really.
The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. all in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
So, Pete, slowly but surely we're getting there. There's still the Kawhi stuff and the aspiration stuff, but the Peyton Watson deal was, I think, one of the key, where's he going to go? What's that going to mean for Denver? And what's that going to mean for the teams who are still seeking out front court solutions? And the two teams who I think need a power forward most are the Lakers and Minnesota. Right now, Minnesota is looking at starting three guards and a small forward, right? You talked about Anthony Edwards and LaMelo. The next guy up after that is Ayo Dosunmu. And the next guy up after that is Jaden McDaniels. And then it's Rudy Gobert. And that projects to be their starting lineup right now. And we can talk about the Lakers like, okay, they really need a power forward. At least Luka is forward-sized as a quote-unquote guard player. Minnesota really does need another forward-sized dude.
They totally do, and it is such a severe swing from one side of the pendulum to the other because they've been one of the biggest front court teams in the league for the last few years. And so now you're talking three guards and Jaden McDaniels, who's pretty skinny. And I've even heard Chris Finch say, yeah, he's not really a four. And so I could see him being their third option, but him at that starting forward spot, like, I definitely agree with you there.
Yeah, so him and Anthony Edwards potentially needing the guards, small forwards and power forwards and just making it work. That's a tricky equation. Now, I think they are better set up to switch one through four and do a lot of stuff around Rudy and try to get creative in that way. Do you remember that? What All-Star game was that, Pete? It was like 2001 or 2002 when the East basically made this huge comeback against the West. And like the lineup that they had out there was like Stephon Marbury and Allen Iverson and Vince Carter and all of them. It was like four guards and Dikembe. And they basically just like raced the floor up and down against this West team where they were playing like Dirk and KG and Chris Webber and Duncan all at the same time.
It was they couldn't keep up.
Great contrast of styles. But that's what Minnesota projects to be right now. It's just like, look, we're going to run and be super fast. But over the course of a full regular season, when teams are, I think, getting bigger and getting stronger and really emphasizing the sort of power game around the league, I think that's going up, not down. They need a guy. And the Lakers have obviously made their intentions clear. All the reporting about them essentially stalking Jonathan Kuminga over the course of the summer. All we hear about is like, Rob's calling him every day. It's just like, okay, that's nice, but he's still unsigned. So how do you envision this playing out? And is it going to be this massive tug of war between the Lakers and Minnesota for Jonathan Kuminga?
We'll certainly see. A few days ago, it was Cleveland that was supposed to be the team that was the main contender for Kuminga aside from the Lakers. And my read overall on the Kuminga situation is that he and his agent are just trying to get the most money that they possibly can this summer. And if that's from the Lakers, it's from the Lakers, right? But if it's from somebody else, so be it. I don't think they've played their hand particularly well. We'll see how it all plays out. But I think Cleveland for the Kuminga camp was a pretty big domino to fall off because they could make that sort of trade in a way that it's much harder to see that from the Wolves' perspective. So let's entertain this thought of Kuminga to the Wolves and what that could look like. As I mentioned earlier, they're only $4 million under the second apron, and they have use of their taxpayer MLE, which is normally $6 million, but the taxpayer MLE caps you at the second apron. So the most they could offer Kuminga without a sign and trade would be $4 million. They could move like a Terrence Shannon or a Jalen Clark or one of their bench guys, but these are all players making $2, $3 million that I think are kind of important to what their bench is going to be able to be in any way. So I'd be a little surprised if they did that.
Pete, we also need to start counting roster spots for Minnesota. So they've got
good point.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 players on their roster right now. And one of those is Trey Lyles, who is a non-guaranteed deal. They've got to get to 14 players, I would imagine, is where they would feel comfortable.
Sure.
13 is the roster minimum, but most teams carry 14 guys. They can't go and spend $4 million on Jonathan Kuminga to take them up to the second apron and basically just be hard capped. And we've only got 13 guys that's not a recipe for success, especially when you consider one of those guys is Dante DiVincenzo, and he's basically out for the year.
Yes, and that was what I was going to bring up next. So this is a great point that they don't even really have that full $4 million to offer him because they got to fill out their roster just to get to the minimum. That the other route to acquiring him would be a sign and trade, like the Lakers are trying to do. But their guys are Josh Green and Dante DiVincenzo. They're kind of routes to being able to do that. As you just said, DiVincenzo is out at least for most of the year. He's on the last year of his deal, but remember in the playoffs, he tore his Achilles, I think it was. So he's going to be out for most of the season. And then you've got Josh Green making about $14 million, and Minnesota doesn't have any tradable firsts. They've got possession of their 2032 first, but because of the Stepien rule, it's not tradable. They also only have one tradable second round pick. So for somebody to take on Josh Green, they'd have to trade a certain amount of salary, I think $5.5 million. Then you stack the extra $9 million that you get for being under the first apron. If you can find a team, you can get up to Josh Green's salary. But they don't have any draft pick sweeteners. So it's like somebody's going to have to take on Josh Green or an injured Dante DiVincenzo out of the goodness of their heart for a second round pick. And I even think it's like if it conveys between 51 and 60 type thing, it's like a late second round pick even, that there's no real incentive for that. So all of this points to a vet min for Jonathan Kuminga. I know you're listening to the Hoop Collective podcast and all of them, surprise, surprise, were like, oh yeah, Kuminga should go there on a vet minimum type of thing. But it does feel like if you've followed this Kuminga storyline over the course of several weeks, it's been sort of a anybody but the Lakers, hello, mic check, is anybody available, anybody out there, that it's felt like they've been trying to find either leverage to get the Lakers to improve their offer or a better offer, which I guess you need the better offer to have leverage against the Lakers, but I just don't see how Kuminga gets that. So let's take our second break here, come back to you. I want to hear your thoughts on this idea of where the best place for Kuminga is.
At Graybar, we know your time is money. That's why our services go beyond parts and products. With kitting, pre-assembly, wire carts, and Graybar smart reels that keep you moving. We stage materials and manage logistics so you can spend less time sorting and more time installing. And with locations nationwide, we deliver when and where you need it, working to make your job easier every step of the way. Yep, Graybar does that.
So I'm going to make both arguments as sincerely as I can, right? From the Jonathan Kuminga perspective and why a minimum with Minnesota could actually be okay for him, right? And he gets to go to Minnesota. He gets to play with a young team with a role where he'd very likely start. Now, would he likely close? I don't know. He would have to be better than Ayo Dosunmu, for example, because he's not closing over Jaden McDaniels and he's not closing over Anthony Edwards or
LaMelo or Gobert.
Yeah, or this LaMelo Ball.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even think he's not closing over Rudy Gobert either.
They're no, that's what I'm saying is there's one spot left in that closing five. The other four spots are all very much accounted for.
And in theory, I guess he could, but I think that he's guaranteed a starting role, but not necessarily guaranteed a closing role. And there's probably anywhere between 25 and 32 minutes a night available to him. And I think with the sort of young and athletic team that he has, he could potentially do a prove it year, very much in the Malik Monk mold of, okay, I've played a year on the minimum, showed what I can do, and now I'm back into the marketplace where I could potentially get the sort of deal that I did not get this last offseason. And is that ideal for me? Is that what I wanted when my player option got declined by the Hawks? No, it wasn't. I was chasing a $20 million a year contract, and that was what was reportedly what he was after. Does that sound great? No, it doesn't, but it's fine. That's one path, and it's viable. The sort of anti-Lakers take from the Kuminga position is that any deal I sign with the Lakers, if it's going to be a sign and trade, has to be a 3-year deal, Pete. And the 3-year deal, all of the contract control would be in the Lakers' hands. It would not be in Jonathan Kuminga's hands. One of the things that Kuminga battled with the Warriors about was whether or not he was going to be on a team option or a player option. And the Warriors ended up winning that by getting a team option, and Kuminga got burned by that. His $20 million contract slated for next season went bye-bye, and now he's stuck in this purgatory that we're talking about where he's seeking out a deal. If I'm Kuminga, that would make me weary of handing over control of seasons 2 and 3 of a 3-year contract potentially to the team. The second part of that is that the first-year contract, or the contract that he's signing for, yes, it would be more than the minimum. It would probably be somewhere in the MLE range. But that's under the value that I would want. And then again, I'm getting locked into a 3-year deal where the team has all of the control. And so would you, if you're doing the math and you're Kuminga or you're his agent and you're talking, would you prefer to say, I'll take $2.5 million now or $3 million now to play on the minimum, right? And then I'm back into the free agent market where I can try to negotiate the best deal, or I make $14 million next season and potentially $14 million the year after that, and potentially $14 million the year after that, and I'm locked in to this deal for 3 years of my prime at a number that is less than what I really want to make in the big picture. Can I just recoup that money later? Now, based off of what his market's been and the fact that cap space and everything else, it's a gamble to me. But those are, to me, the two perspectives that he's got to figure out which is the best way to go.
So let's go down that line a little bit further. He signs with Minnesota on a vet minimum, has a good year there, and goes back and hits the marketplace. Minnesota does not have his bird rights at all, so all they can offer him is, what, 120% of his previous salary, which is not what he's looking for. And they're right up against that second apron, as we've said, so they're not a team that can offer him even the full MLE.
Yeah, the full MLE. Exactly.
Yeah. And so who are the teams next year that are supposed to have cap space? You've got Golden State. I don't think he's going there. You've got Brooklyn and Chicago. If they like Jonathan Kuminga so much, why didn't they do it when they had cap space this year? And he's obviously in a fairly depressed market. Right?
Chicago's also just drafted their two forwards of the future the past few drafts. And so he's not going to Chicago.
And then you've got Atlanta, who he was just there, right? If they wanted to have him at $20 million a year, they would have just exercised his option or renegotiated with him at a lower number. So where is this supposed to be that he's, even if he has a good year, if all of that works out on the positive side of things, where he goes to Minnesota, young athletic team, fits right in, they need a forward, great. Who on that list is paying him the $20 million plus that he wants to make, or the even the high teens type of thing? And so I get that he doesn't want to lock into a 3-year type of deal, but there's a danger in that for him. And with all of this, to flip the perspective as well, D, has your opinion at all changed on your level of interest in him with sort of how this has played out? Because I know there's a decent contingent of Laker fans that are like, man, let this dude walk. He's more trouble than it's worth.
I've heard that perspective, and reflectively, I've pushed back against it, honestly. It's just like, I don't think Kuminga has played his hand particularly well, or him and his agents have played his hand particularly well, but I try to be as player-friendly in all of this stuff as I can. I don't think Kuminga's necessarily been super disruptive in any of the places that he's played for. Obviously, things got contentious in his last year with the Warriors, but I've told you before, Pete, he was not a good fit under Kerr's system, and Kerr made that abundantly clear with him by how he was like, okay, I'll play anyone over you for extended minutes because they're going to play ball the way I want them to play. And if you're Kuminga looking there and saying, all right, you're going to play Gui Santos over me for all of these minutes, or play these sort of undrafted level guys in front of me, and this is your solution? I'm a guy who scored 20-something points in a playoff game when you guys were shorthanded, but I can't be trusted with a long enough leash to play through my mistakes or be a little bit greedy on a handful of possessions a game. I get it. You have to coach the player you want to get the outcomes that you want play after play after play. But he's a super talented player, Pete. And I'm not saying he's perfect by any means. I think there's going to be plenty of times where he's going to do the same sort of stuff that Rui did that made us upset, where it's just like, look, bro, you can't ball fake here and dribble into 17-footers over and over again. That's not necessarily the look that we want. That said, even his floor as an athlete and his floor as a talent, I think is worth going down this path as far as you can go with it until he either signs with you or signs with another team. I don't think the Lakers are in a position to be choosers here to the level where it's just like, all right, man, what are you going to do then? Are you just going to start Mamu? Like,
exactly. I totally agree with this. And I am not at that point either of just let this guy walk. I also don't think they're in a position to be beggars either.
Sure.
In that I think they should hold the line with where they're at. What I think, if Kuminga's camp, and we don't know this, but if they're trying to get the most money out of the Lakers possible, I think the idea is that you get toward very close to training camp and the Lakers don't have this position filled and the Lakers go, okay, fine, here's an extra $2 million, $3 million or whatever on our initial offer and you help get it done. And this is all operating under the presumption that they can get something worked out with Atlanta in a sign and trade in the first place, right? But I don't think the Lakers should really be in that type of mindset either, in that, like, okay, we'll pay him an extra, because it locks the Lakers into a three-year deal as well, where we had that conversation earlier in the summer of like Mr. Right versus Mr. Right Now. He's way closer to a Mr. Right Now in my mind than a Mr. Right. And so I don't think they should, especially with how the market has played out, I don't think they have the need to kind of push this up to another few million dollars just to get it done.
For me, Pete, I think the line of demarcation is actually an MLE deal. And I think if you're going to attract Kuminga, I think it needs to be at or above what the MLE, the mid-level exception, the full MLE is for next season and beyond. And because I think that if his agents are looking at this correctly, they're seeing the same sort of cap space landscape that you just envisioned, with the same teams being limited in terms of, okay, there actually aren't teams who project to both have cap space and a need for us as a player. And so that sort of then puts you into the exception world, right? And when you're shopping for an exception, obviously you're shopping for the full MLE. And until it's proven that you can't get that, that's going to be your market that you're going out there for.
I'd argue that could have happened for him this summer if there was a team out there that wanted to give him that. And say the Lakers are offering a $14 million salary, which is a little bit below what the MLE was this year and obviously will be below what it will be in future years. But if they offered him that $14 million and he's like, no, I'm going to sign with Minnesota for three, you've still got that $11 million to make up on top of that too, where it can't just be like, you've got to be able to offer him $16.5 million. I don't know what the MLE is going to be next year, but you have to offer him that now or else it makes sense for him to hit the marketplace again when he couldn't even get the MLE this year.
So the MLE next year projects to be about 15.9. It's like 15.87, right?
Okay.
So one of the things that Brian Windhorst mentioned was the Lakers could still be in this with a sign and trade using Jaden Hardy's salary. If Hardy's the only player going out, then Kuminga would basically make about 12.25 million. And that to me is both under this year's MLE and severely under future MLEs, and you're locking yourself into a three-year deal. So this is where I think the question is, the simplest path for the Lakers moving forward, and I'm sure this is what they've been arguing and negotiating with the Hawks about, is, look, man, you don't want to take back a player? I get it. We can do a three-team deal. We'll dump Jaden Hardy into some team's exception or whatever. We'll send them cash to cover basically all of his salary or most of it if they want to waive him. We'll give that team a second round pick and we'll give you a second round pick as well, right? And the prize at the end of that is them getting their starting power forward for $12 million, Pete.
Pretty good.
And I think that's where the negotiation is breaking down with Kuminga's camp. It's just like, no. We want more than $12 million. You've got more tradable salary that you can add to a deal in order to get us up higher. So then the Lakers are then talking to Atlanta and they're like, okay, then do you want Dalton Connect as part of this?
Right.
And Atlanta's just like, nah, man, we're $3 million below the luxury
tax. And we got 16 dudes.
Yeah. And
16,
we've got
17 guaranteed.
We don't want any players. We don't want any of that. So then the Lakers then have to go out into the marketplace again and be like, well, do you want Dalton Connect too? Or do you want Jared Vanderbilt. And then those negotiations get harder from the Lakers' perspective, and that ends up being not what the Lakers want to do. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And that also includes that the Lakers might not want to pay him that higher number of 15, 16 because of how it adds up on their books in the next couple of transaction cycles, right? Because they want to spend between where they're at now and the second apron, which they can't do this year. They're hard capped at the first apron this year. They want to spend as much as they can, though, in the next couple of transaction cycles, get the best players possible all the way up to that second apron, where the more you pay Jonathan Kuminga, the less you have for everybody else. And so we're going to wrap up here. We will see how this all wraps up. Good to get back to Jonathan Kuminga. Oh, man. Crazy 10 days. But everybody have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. They will. The Lakers win the game!
Rebound to Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way. Good!
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal! Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it!
Bryant!
Unbelievable.
For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.